Good morning. This is Chair Peter Fisher. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Behavioral Health Policy Division to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Morning, everyone. Welcome back. Fisher.
Fisher present.
Frederick.
Present.
Frankie.
Frankie present.
Backer.
Backer present.
Baker.
Baker present.
Becker Finn.
Becker Finn present.
Hansen.
Hansen present.
Katiza Watoon. Let's see, Katiza Watoon. Lippert.
Lippert present.
Moeller.
Moeller present.
Pearson.
Pearson present.
Thompson.
Thompson present.
All right. Whatever my line is, that we have a quorum again.
Okay. A quorum is present. Great. Thank you. Our first agenda item this morning is approval of the minutes from our last meeting, which took place on Wednesday, March 17th of last year. Are there any questions or corrections on the minutes? If not, the chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Frankie moves approval of the minutes for March 17th, 2021. Please unmute for a voice vote. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes stand approved. Members, I'd like to welcome everyone back to the 2022 legislative session. I'm excited to reconvene the Behavioral Health Policy Division for another year of work. I want to say that last session, this committee did some incredible work in a very bipartisan fashion to address the needs of our state in the areas of mental health and substance use disorder. We vetted 14 bills, all of which passed out of this committee unanimously, and 13 of those 14 bills became law as part of the 2021 Health and Human Services Budget Omnibus Bill. I want to thank all the committee members from both sides of the aisle for their contributions to the successes, particularly Vice Chair Frederick and our Republican lead, Representative Frankie. I look forward to continuing to work together in a collaborative session to help move the issues forward that will help address these issues across the state of Minnesota. Based on the committee deadlines adopted for this session, I expect that we will have a total of 9 hearings this session at a regular meeting time on Wednesdays. We are waiting for more bills to be referred to our way before we start considering legislation. So for the first 2 weeks, we'll be receiving presentations to help prepare us for the work that we will be doing. If there are any specific bills or issues that you would like the committee to consider this session, I would encourage you to reach out to me in the coming days as we continue to develop our schedule. Today, I have invited the Department of Human Services to provide us an update on the implementation of the new laws in the behavioral health area from 2021 and to preview their legislative agenda for 2022, which we will hear as a bill later this session. We have Christy Graham and Neersha Singh with us from the department today to present this information. Ms. Graham, welcome back to the committee. Please begin your presentation and we'll save questions until the end unless you would like to pause at any point during your remarks. Ms. Graham, are you ready to go?
I am. Sorry, I was muted. Getting used to this again.
That's all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Christy Graham, and I'm with the Department of Human Services. I'm the Legislative Director for the Community Supports Administration. Really happy to be back here with you and members today. We do have a PowerPoint presentation that Mr. Burdick is going to queue up. All right. So really happy to be back here in this committee. I would second all of the comments that you mentioned. I'm here today with my colleague, Neersha Singh, who's the Clinical Behavioral Health Director for the Community Supports Administration. And I can say that both of us really enjoyed our time with all of you last session as well. It feels kind of like home. So we're really happy to be here and be sharing some updates with you. So we're first gonna start off with an update on things that passed last session as they relate to behavioral health. And then we'll walk into some of the governor's 2022 behavioral health policy priorities and supplemental budget recommendations. But before we do that, just a couple of quick notes. A lot of good work happened last session, right? Wasn't that long ago that we know that the legislature passed some really meaningful policy changes, a really historic health and human services budget bill, and certainly many investments in mental health and substance use disorder services. In part, I think, due to some of the focus here that you all had in this committee in the House, but also in part to all of the federal funding that came into Minnesota last year. For example, we received additional substance abuse block grant funding, mental health block grant funding on top of what we would normally get from SAMHSA. So we had extra dollars from the Consolidated Appropriations Act and from the American Rescue Plan Act. And we also received a really significant influx of revenue from, or projected revenue, I should say, from the Home and Community-Based Services Enhanced FMAP, or Federal Medical Assistance Percentage, our federal match to our medical assistance spending in Minnesota. So I want to do a quick refresher on that funding, because it was a really unique funding that we've never really encountered before. And the timing and the requirements around it do really impact the way we're able to implement the provisions that were passed in 2021. So just as a reminder, the enhanced FMAP is, when we talk about that, that's a 10% enhanced match. So usually we get about a 50% match from the federal government. And in this case, we're getting an enhanced 10% match on our certain eligible activities for home and community-based services spending. And we have to hold that extra, the funding that we get, the revenue that we get from that enhanced match, we have to hold it and spend it on both Medicaid and non-Medicaid expenditures that would enhance, expand, and improve our HCBS system. So really the underlying spirit was to accelerate reforms and innovate in this policy space. And we've got up until March 31st of 2024 to spend those dollars. So last session, many of you probably remember, we didn't get guidance on this until well into session in May. So it was a bit of a scramble as the legislature allocated those dollars in their budget bill to figure out how we were going to do that. But we ended up with a really significant amount of funding, almost $700 million. I want to say $686 million or so was the projected revenue that we had to spend in the budget bill. So following session, Minnesota submitted our initial state spending plan in early July, and we received partial approval for that in late September. So we got some assurances to move forward on certain provisions that were funded with those dollars, but we didn't receive full conditional approval until just about a week or two ago. So as Nirja walks through the implementation updates, you'll notice an asterisk next to each of the provisions that were significantly delayed, because we literally just got approval to move forward with them. I think it was last week or the week before. And lastly, before we delve into the implementation updates, I'll just note that we have a lot of spending on behavioral health grants that we manage at the department. So we've got a significant amount of spending already. And then last year, all of the new dollars led to about a 40% increase on top of what we were already doing in this space. So that's great news for us. It's great news for Minnesota, but it also means that we need to really increase our attention on internal controls and making sure that we're administering all of those grants according to our state procurement laws and with it, the most integrity possible. So with that, I will turn it to Nirja to start sharing some of the implementation updates that we have.
Nirja Singh, if you'd like to go ahead, introduce yourself and start your presentation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. My name is Nirja Singh, and I am the Clinical Director for Community Supports Administration, and Behavioral Health Division is part of Community Supports Administration. So as Christy said, we did make historical investments last session in building and strengthening the behavioral health system in Minnesota. And I am going to be walking through some of the main implementations that we are undertaking right now. So I would start with mental health uniform service standards work. Mr. Chair and members, as you know, that USS is a multi-phase system-wide project to reform and simplify the regulations and service standards of Minnesota's mental health system. The goal of the project is to reduce administrative burden, mitigate confusion, and most importantly, support the providers to maximize their time and energy in client care. DHS continued to work with stakeholders to implement different aspects of USS, which were passed in 2021. We are holding statewide webinars to provide an overview of the implementation for Intensive Residential Treatment Services, commonly known as ERTS, and Residential Crisis Services. Participation in these webinars has been really encouraging, and I am pleased to inform you, Mr. Chair, and the members that we had over 400 participants across the state in one of these webinars. In addition to streamlining the standards for these two services, DHS is working to simplify access to mobile crisis services and ensure that our standards of care in that service are responsive to both children and adults. We are currently conducting cross-analysis to eliminate any unintentional differences, and again, most importantly, to set guidelines to engage family members and other third parties when they call for crisis, mental health crisis assistance. Children's mental health screening grants. These grants are very important as they provide support to screen our children for possible mental health concerns so that interventions can be planned as soon as the concerns are identified. Our county and tribal partners had to enter this data manually, causing immense administrative burden. As directed by the legislation in 2021, DHS made the changes and added major data collection fields in our system, which will be effective statewide on February 23rd, 2022. We are really hopeful that this will significantly reduce the administrative burden and enhance the system of tracking data on children's screening outcomes and also follow-up measures. Intensive treatment and foster care. We did perform a lot of policy changes as directed by the legislation in 2021 because we realized that COVID taught us the urgency to invest in our community-based services. So wherever possible, we can support our children and adults in need of mental health services to stay in the community and get the services they need. DHS implemented the changes passed in 2021 to support the providers in intensive treatment and foster care, commonly known as ITFC, and we have submitted a request to CMS to temporarily allow reduction in the hours when providers and or the family are not able to meet the required number of hours to bill for the services. This request went to CMS on January 25th, 2022, and we continue to work with providers to reform and streamline the system. Another important addition that we made as directed by legislation in 2021 was realizing the importance of supporting our providers to develop a comprehensive and culturally responsive treatment plan and to facilitate consultations among different treatment team members. We submitted a request to CMS on January 25th of this year to include treatment plan development and clinical care consultations as part of the daily per client encounter rate for this service. So this will really help our clinicians and other providers to bill when they engage in development of treatment plan and then they consult with other providers like teachers, doctors, and other members of the treatment team. Case management redesign, this has been going on for years now. And as you'll see the asterisk, the approval for this appropriation, like the conditional approval for this appropriation did not come until last week. So we had received a legislative appropriation to fund redesign initial reform work, especially to implement the statewide rate methodology and also to develop a tribal-specific case management benefit. The new rate methodology for case management is planned to go into effect on July 1, 2022. And as Ms. Graham mentioned, since now we have conditional approval of our spending plan, we will be issuing an RFP to make the needed changes and also develop like a culturally responsive as well as a tribal specific case management design. You all were very kind of helpful and instrumental in passing a lot of needed measures on telehealth for behavioral health. And COVID did teach us again the crucial importance of telehealth for our field. 2021 legislation expanded access to telemedicine services for children health insurance programs, medical assistance, as well as Minnesota Care enrollees. Legislation also allowed telehealth alternatives for our school linked mental health services and extended it until July 1, 2023. All the changes directed by a legislator in context to adding the behavioral health staff has really authorized our behavioral health providers to perform services via telemedicine. Providers such as recovery peers, family peer specialists, mental health peers, behavioral ed, AIDS, and drug and alcohol counselors are now able to, they continue to provide services to the clients using telemedicine modality. In addition, as directed in 2021, DHS has removed the coverage limit on 3 telehealth visits, which allows the providers to use telehealth as deemed appropriate in client's treatment plan. DHS also made changes to allow the providers to use and document clients' verbal consent to treatment when, due to COVID or other complications, a physical signature was not just feasible. During the pandemic, audio-only modality was approved to be used as an acceptable mode of treatment by mental health and substance use professionals. Legislators directed DHS to continue use of audio-only modality until July 1, 2023, and in order to make informed decisions, a comprehensive study on telehealth expansion and payment parity was directed. As again, you'll see that the funding for this study was part of our request for CMS to approve our spending plan, which we did not get approved until last week. However, DHS had already started collaboration with Department of Health to initiate the study. So as soon as now we get the formal approval, we will be issuing an RFP, and we will be a big part of the study will be focused on behavioral health field. So while we were waiting and coordinating with MDH, DHS did use some of our internal resources to initiate part 2 of the study that we had conducted in 2021. This study in 2020 and 2021, we have sought partnership with University of Minnesota and Wilder Research to conduct an analysis of different modes of telemedicine, which includes audio visual and only audio. We are also partnering with our teams in the DHS from the Division of Deaf and Hard and Hearing to make sure that telehealth and telemedicine modalities are really responsive to the needs of our clients with different disabilities. We are holding focus groups across the state with consumers of behavioral health services, providers, and other stakeholders to engage and understand their experience with telemedicine, especially in context of cultural and linguistic factors. We are having these focus groups on the weekends so that people do not have to take off from their work days and they don't have to worry for childcare if they want to participate in that. So we are really looking forward to wrapping up the results of this study and use the information for the report due to legislation in January 2023. Next slide, please. The legislator created a pathway for children to access residential mental health treatment outside of foster care and 260D. The implementation of pathways was delayed as DHS was trying to figure out some systemic intricacies in the system in terms of funding and reporting. However, a bulletin on the program and all the steps will be released later this month on the implementation steps, and DHS will work with counties and tribal governments to ensure a seamless implementation of this model. The 2021 legislature expanded the definition of mental health practitioners to include students who are completing practicum or internship as part of formal program in social work, psychology, or counseling. In addition, legislature had expanded the use of children's mental health grants to provide supervision of clinical trainees who are Black, Indigenous, or people of color. DHS implemented these changes and communication went out on September 17, 2021 to the providers. We are really hopeful to track the impact of these changes and see how these measures will provide some reprieve to our dwindling mental health workforce. A statewide per diem rate was established as directed by legislature in 2021 for residential crisis stabilization services provided to our medical assistant enrollees, and a request was submitted to CMS for approval on January 5th, 2022. Co-linked mental health programs were expanded to really integrate and include substance use disorder care in our treatment for our children and youth in school. The statute for school-linked mental health was amended to create school-linked behavioral health grants. Since the funding was allocated from federal health grants, we needed CMS approval for our spending plan, and this one does not have an asterisk. So we will be issuing an RFP since we have received a conditional approval from CMS. We are really working with the stakeholders to assess the current needs, and then these RFPs will be designed to serve two purposes. One, to add licensed alcohol drug counselors in school settings to address the treatment needs, and also to incorporate investments on promotion and prevention of healthy life skills related to prevention of substance use disorders, which will include providing resources in schools on psychoeducation and other modalities as related to prevention of substance use. So we will make sure to conduct a comprehensive need assessment as we allocate these grants. Our certified community behavioral health clinics are based on an integrated community behavioral health model of care that aims to improve access to quality care to behavioral health in Minnesota. We continue to strengthen these models to provide integrated community-based care. 2021 legislature passed modifications for these models, and all those modifications are meant to enhance the quality and access of the services provided through CCBHC. DHS has implemented a majority of these modifications. We continue to participate in federal demonstration programs until June 30th, 2022. The state plan was approved effective October 1, 2020, providing federal authority to cover CCBS services under Medicaid. DHS is working diligently with the providers to ensure that effective July 1, 2022, demonstration CCBSCs will transfer to state plan authority, thereby allowing for full alignment of service criteria, payment rules, and evaluation. DHS is also working with the providers in CCBSCs to transition from wrap payments to full daily payments, and we want to ensure that we facilitate a seamless transition to this mode. We are very excited to report that numeric thresholds of for performance measurements for these models have been developed and published. So we are working now closely with the providers on CCBSC recertification process. Next slide, please. 2021 legislature acknowledged the need to invest in services designed to address substance use disorders in Minnesota. Various important changes took place to support the providers as we continue to strengthen our system to cope with rising pandemic of substance use. Recovery community organization funding, again, there's an asterisk. This funding was part of our request to CMS for our approval of our spending plan, which we just received last week, a conditional approval. So we will be issuing an RFP for these grants to support our community-based peer recovery support system. And these RFPs hopefully will go out by end of March 2022. Important investments were made in 1115 demonstration projects to ensure the success of SUD system reform efforts in Minnesota. DHS is working to support the providers to seek enrollment in the demonstration. We are having open office hours, doing individual consults, webinars across the state, and providing tons of written and verbal technical assistance to ensure that our providers in Minnesota are getting support to incorporate evidence-based protocol of substance use treatment in their care model. We are currently working with CMS on integrating rate payment, rate enhancement. We have initiated the process of collaborating with providers from rural areas and are in the process of convening a project evaluation work group. We have already started the process of meeting with stakeholders as we design this evaluation work group to gain an insight into their aspirations and struggles as they are associated with implementation of demonstration. 2021 legislator amended the definition of culturally specific programs to include culturally responsive variables. The change was meant to ensure compliance with national standards for culturally and linguistically appropriate services, which I will just come in a minute. In addition, the legislator also added a definition of a disability responsive program to make sure that the program is well designed to serve the needs of people with disabilities, including, but not limited to traumatic brain injury, cognitive and other physical disabilities. DHS has completed a SPA request and it was submitted to CMS on January 5th, 2022. While we wait for federal approval, we will continue to work on system changes to make sure that once we get that approval, we can conduct a seamless transition into coding and billing systems. 2021 legislators specified a limit to payment for outpatient treatment hours for substance use disorders to 6 hours per day or 30 hours per week. In order to ensure that our SUD treatment plans are based on medical necessity as determined by a professional, DHS submitted a SPA request to CMS again on January 5th, 2022. We will continue to work with providers to develop a system of authorizing hours beyond 30 hours per week based on the medical necessity manifested by the client, because we want to make sure that if and when needed, clients are able to access hours more than approved in this service. Culturally and linguistically appropriate services. We are excited to roll out the plan to incorporate class standards across the behavioral health services in Minnesota. We are, as you will see, there's an asterisk. So after we receive final approval of our spending plan, we will be issuing an RFP to implement class standards for the providers in behavioral health across the state. While we were waiting for the federal approval, DHS did hire a lead for implementation of class across behavioral health. And we are currently consulting with Federal Office of Behavioral Health Equity to receive technical assistance to design class standards in accordance to specific unique attributes of behavioral health providers in Minnesota. So we want to create a class model specific to Minnesota in consult with Office of Behavioral Health Equity and also Office of Minority Health. Paperwork reduction. 2021 legislator directed DHS to develop, assess, and recommend system improvements to minimize regulatory paperwork and administrative burden on the providers who are licensed in Minnesota. We will issue an RFP. As you'll see, it is also contingent upon our approval from CMS. So the funding is contingent upon approval from CMS, and we did receive conditional approval last week. We will issue an RFP to contract with a vendor. While we are waiting for that funding to be approved, I am very pleased to share that while waiting, DHS and substance use disorder providers in Minnesota, including representation from our rural providers, we are able to formulate a joint work group, and a lot of groundwork has been done. DHS Office of Continuous Improvement convened a cross-administration group and developed a flow chart on different requirements associated with substance use treatment. The flow chart is currently being reviewed by the providers, and DHS is planning to host statewide focus groups with the providers to seek their input as we continue to develop this RFP. 2021 legislature directed DHS to develop opioid treatment program rate recommendations. This directive yielded intensive cross-administration work in DHS. We analyzed the current rate structure for non-tribal opioid treatment programs in Minnesota and made recommendations of changes. We shared the recommended changes with stakeholders and received their feedback. The recommendations to the legislation are being finalized as I speak, and we will be submitting the report very soon. It is our hope that the proposed rate structure will help us to seek compliance with CMS directive, address the concerns identified in OLA audit regarding payments of self-administered medications for non-tribal providers, and most importantly, enhance the quality and access to non-medication components of SUD services for people in Minnesota. DHS collaborated with Humphrey School of Public Affairs at University of Minnesota and developed a tool that we plan to share with the providers as we assess the effectiveness of OTP programs in Minnesota and support our providers to ensure best possible care for clients. Next slide. There were like multiple studies directed in 2021, and I am very pleased to inform that for sober homes, sober housing studies, DHS has completed the contract to cover all the important aspects of this analysis and to ensure that we are able to make comprehensive recommendations to the legislation on this model. This study, the contract for this study, will follow a three-pronged approach, which will include analysis of best and culturally responsive practices in sober homes, formulation of a work group, and incorporate inputs from the consumers of the service through an equity lens. We are currently gauging interest from different stakeholder groups to participate in the work group, and invites for this meeting will go out before February 15th. In addition, we are submitting an IRB proposal, as I mentioned, to include interviews with the consumers, the clients who have received these services. We have DHS and MDE work together with a group of providers for school-based mental health programs to analyze the current gaps in funding mechanisms for our school-based mental health services. The report is going through its final approval and will be presented to the legislation very soon. The report has made some very specific recommendations to broaden the eligibility for school-based mental health services for all students, irrespective of their IEP status. And most importantly, to develop strategies to mitigate duplication and redundancy of processes as we determine medical necessity of school-based mental health services. Rate study for mental health and SUD services. We will be issuing an RFP. And since now we have a conditional approval for our spending plan to fund this study, as we are waiting for this final approval, we have developed a draft of RFP, and we will be sharing the draft with stakeholders. I think the meeting with the stakeholders is scheduled sometime on February 10th or 15th. The last study that we have initiated as directed by legislation in 2021 is to identify gaps and reducing barriers for children in residential treatment. DHS hosted a four-day children's summit in January and brought together almost 1,100 participants to identify gaps in our current continuum of care. This study, which was directed by legislation, will build on the information gathered during the summit and will conduct a thorough review of missed opportunities in the clinical and social services side of the continuum. The RFP for this study will be issued as soon as we are able to get the final approval from CMS. We did get the conditional approval last week. the one-time grant funding for mobile crisis grants, we are hopeful that these RFPs will be issued by end of February. Transitions to community policy reforms and funding, these will be issued sometime end of April of 2022. And provider capacity grants for rural and underserved communities, again, this is contingent on our CMS, approval of our CMS spending plan. And as soon as we get the final approval, the RFPs will be issued. Thank you. Back to Christy.
First of all, I want to say, Director Singh, thank you for your part of the presentation. And I would like to say, before we jump into the priorities, I know that we've just had the opportunity to get a lot of great information here. And a lot of ground covered. And so I want to take a quick pause because I know I've got a couple of questions, but before I start with mine, I'd like to see if anybody has any questions that they would like to raise at this time with the amount we have. And it looks, oh, wow, I see the hands going up. We will start with Representative Frederick and then go to Representative Frankie. Representative Frederick, if you'd like to go ahead, please.
Mr. Chair, one quick question that I would have is looking at the certified community behavioral health centers. I'm trying to wrap my head around what the difference between those were and the CBHHs that existed 4 or 5 years ago that were shut down. I think they were operated by DHS for a period of 5 years. And so I'd hate to see us open something, shut it down, give it a couple of years, open something again, just to have it last for a couple of years, just to shut it down again. And so if they are similar, what's the approach this time around that's going to be different to make sure that this can be more of a long-lasting service that we're not just going to be operating for a short term?
And would that be Ms. Graham or would that be Director Singh that would like to try to answer that?
Nirja, did you want to take that one? I'm happy to respond, but you probably have more background than I do.
Director Singh? Not able to hear you, Director Singh. Ms. Graham, why don't you go ahead? Oh, there we go.
Sorry about that. It was the audio. Mr. Chair Representative, thank you for the question. Nirja Singh, Community Supports Administration Director for Clinical Services. The Behavioral Health Home, CBHH, are DCT. They were run by DCT. So direct care treatment. And also, I don't know if we have the complete analysis done to find out why they failed, but for CCBSCs, there is like a full model developed, which is integrated care. But I think I have Matt Burdick here who will have more history on this. And I'm not sure if they're all even shut down, so we can get back to that question on CBHH. I will have to get back on those because I think there are 5 or 6 who are still around, but we will confirm that. Matt or Christy, do you want to take that more than I can throw?
I think that was helpful. We can certainly get back to you, Mr. Chair and Representative Frederick. The community behavioral health hospitals are state operated, as Ms. Singh mentioned, and our CCBHCs are a little bit different in that they're not state operated, and they're really intended to be the new model of care, integrating mental health and SDD services across the state. There is definitely a commitment to this model. There's no plans to shut these down. Really, we want to expand this model and continue as we have with the permanent authority under the state plan to continue this model and expand it across the state so people continue to have this access in all regions. But happy to get back to you with any more detailed answers that might be of use for you, Representative.
Representative Frederick, any further questions?
No, I'm good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Super. Thank you. Next, I'll be going to Representative Frankie, and then after that will be Representative Thompson. Representative Frankie, if you'd like to go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several questions. I'll try to consolidate some of them. I guess one of my first questions is, it's great to see, you know, we have a 38.2% increase in the health grants. Can we get some, and some of these questions don't have to be answered right now, if Ms. Grom or Director Singh can just get them to us. What's the breakdown of those grants, not only where they're going, but what areas they're being used in? And along with a lot of these other initiatives, how much of that is one-time funding? And with that one-time funding, how much of that is something that may need ongoing investment from us as a state to keep some of these great programs going? So that's one of my questions that I think probably can't be answered right now. But if I could get that information, that would be great. And then on to my next question. When we're doing these children's preventative health screenings, do we know, or is there a possible way to get the ages of where that begins and where those happen? I'd be interested to know, are they happening in schools? Are they happening with providers? Are these parent initiated? Are they counselor initiated? And then where are we seeing the most growth or concern? At what age groups? And where do we need to, you know, put most of our focus? I mean, right now we're seeing, you know, and I've been preaching this since the beginning of this pandemic, that our kids are just having such a hard time. And where are we seeing the most need? Because we're just seeing so many of these kids act out right now, and I think we need to focus on that. So how can we connect those dots? And that information can be, you know, emailed to me. That would be great. Let's see here. On the mental health, or the mental health, the telehealth, are we tracking the outcomes? I guess I'd kind of like an answer to that right now, with the, especially in the SUD area. I heard Director Singh talk about there's a study in the different modalities of possible types of this telehealth, but are we doing anything now, since we're seeing this transition and we're hoping that it works, that in the short term or long term, are we tracking what those outcomes are going to be, or are we going to be tracking what those outcomes are going to be, so we can have a proven model?
Ms. Grob?
Mr. Chair and Representative Frankie, thank you for the thoughtful questions. One of the reasons why we really enjoy being in this committee, we know you really dig into those details and care about these issues. So, really quickly, I'll say on the grants, we do have a voluminous amount of grants, and we are happy to share a list of those with you offline. I will also say that as we walk through the 2022 governor's supplemental budget recommendations, you'll note that there are a handful of them that are continuing funding, where last session it was temporary funding. And so we are trying to ameliorate, you know, that potential cliff that would occur in the 2022 budget recommendation. So we'll get you more information on those grants and what's one time and what's ongoing. In terms of the children's mental health screening grants, those are screening grants that are for counties and tribes that are really to help identify mental health issues for children that are involved in the child welfare and the juvenile justice systems. And exactly what you're asking for, like what, you know, what are the outcomes? What is the data? How can we use that information to make our service system better, is exactly why we passed that policy proposal last session, because what that proposal did was allowed us to get more than kind of that basic summary data than we have right now, to dig deeper and really look at what we need to do to actually make some modifications in our services to have better outcomes. So if we have access to that data, some of it is protected, as it should be, where we can look into that and provide you what we have available. In terms of the telehealth questions, I will turn it to Ms. Singh to respond to that question.
Ms. Singh?
Mr. Chair, Representative Frankie, Mirza Singh, Community Support Administration. Yes, absolutely. We will be tracking outcomes in both the studies as it relates to behavioral health. We are working currently with Wilder and University of Minnesota to identify the quantitative as well as the qualitative outcomes of different modalities in terms of client satisfaction, as well as how the clinicians were able to address specific clinical concerns which brought the client to see behavioral health services, including mental health diagnosis, as well as addiction-related issues. So yes to your question, and we will be glad to share any outcomes and any results that are generated. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Director Singh. Before I jump back to Representative Frankie, I'd like to mention to Ms. Grammy is that with the grant information, if you could share that besides with Representative Frankie with the whole committee, that we would, I think we'd all find that very interesting. Representative Frankie, further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't remember specifically, just a couple more quick questions. On the sober housing study report, do we have what a possible, and also I guess I'll just throw the other one in there, the gaps and barriers for children in SGD treatment report. What are the, I know we're talking, the RFPs are going out and people are getting together and we're talking. What are the possible final dates? I don't remember if in some of the, at least off the top of my head, I just want to write them in my current notes, what the final dates are for when those will be out.
Ms. Grab?
Mr. Chair, Representative Frankie, I'm just looking. I believe the final report, there's recommendations that are due to the legislature. I believe it's next year. I don't have the date in front of me. Oh, September 1st, 2022. So we'll be, I know Ms. Singh is working on convening a group of stakeholders. We haven't issued the RFP, we have been working kind of behind the scenes to do what we can within the funds that we have available. And we have a list of stakeholder names, and we're starting those sober housing meetings coming up in pretty short order here. And then hopefully we'll be on track to meet that deadline of September 1st of 2022. In terms of the other study that you referenced, I don't know that date off the top of my head. I would have to get back to you on it, but I can take a peek and get back to you and the members on when those recommendations are due.
Okay. Representative Frankie, further questions?
No, that's it for now. If I have any more, I'll just email Ms. Grom directly. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you, Representative Frankie. Great questions. Representative Thompson, you're next.
First of all, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Frankie, for speaking out about our children. I do know specifically last week, or the week before last, our children actually had a district-wide walkout organized by the teen activists group. And so our kids were screaming something to us, but were we listening to them is what I'm asking. The other thing is, this is just a couple of things, Chair, and I'll be fast. I remember saying almost a year ago as a freshman here, when the state was closed down, that my community in particular would be in an epidemic after the pandemic passed and they opened the state back up. Thus, we see a rise in crime in my community, in particular crimes like carjackings by teenagers, 14 years old. These kids are screaming something to us right now. And if you're just as bold enough to walk up on somebody and put a gun on them and make them get out of their car, there's something going on up here. We figure out ways to incarcerate our youth and how to get them into the judicial system. We haven't figured out ways to help our youth. And I know in my community, we pay just as much in tax dollars as everybody else, but it seems like we don't get our fair share when it comes to culturally intelligent mental health providers in our community, in our schools. And the first thing we do is say, oh, we'll just lock them away and throw away the key. We've already tried to do the, Chair, crime in my community has become a political talking point. Like people who don't live in this community can actually fix the crime in my community. Only problem is we've already tried what they're trying to do now, and that's lock everybody up. We have a serious problem with mental health, behavioral health, depression, suicide, opioid abuse in the African American community. Lo and behold, you know, someone from Mankato can actually fix what's going on here on the east side of St. Paul, or even in North Minneapolis. They're not in tune with the people who could actually do the work. And I've moved to my point because you talked about grants and RFPs. We have very good organizations. We actually have the tools that we need in our community. It seems like when we ask for some of our tax dollars to help implement some of these plans, we get sprinkles. Or we have to go through the red tape of how to figure out how to navigate these RFPs and these grants. And so what winds up happening is the people who are always good at writing grants and proposals, these are the people who actually get this stuff over and over and over again, and it doesn't trickle down to help for our kids who are actually screaming at us. And by the way, these kids are our future, I'm talking about. And so I know all of us are going to be senior citizens one day. We're going to need them to take care of us. And I'm for sure that our kids are screaming something to us right now over and over again. And so I didn't hear anything in this plan that actually would benefit the kids in my community. Like, we're actually asking for like behavioral health hubs in our community for children who actually just need somebody to talk to. You know, when I look at the 8218 Truce over here in St. Paul, these are organizations that are doing the work with limited resources, but yet still we pay a lot in tax dollars, and then we come and ask, can we get some help from the state? I don't think this program will work, but what I'm hearing here is like a lot of studies. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm hearing that we're doing studies and we're going to build on what we've done, but we're not lab rats. We actually just need the purse strings loosened in our community so that we could actually do the work in our community. So I just wanted to elaborate and see if you would elaborate on what type of resources you have for your organizations trying to navigate the RFP process and also bringing this into the urban area of the state. Because we pay a lot of tax dollars, but every time we come here and ask for some help, it's like, well, you don't need that much. I'll give you it's like shaking the salt shake. I'll give you that right there. And come back next year. Thank you so much for hearing, but I just wanted to know, like, is there a plan to help people from our community?
Thank you, Representative Thompson. One of the as you're putting that out there, I want to make sure I'm catching part of it this in the right way, is that if I'm understanding you correctly, there seems to be a lot of really small nonprofits that are doing this work out there right now, but because of their size and their limits, they have a difficult time accessing the grants and figuring out how to go through the process with the state to be able to get these dollars. So Representative Thompson, I appreciate you raising that because I've seen that also happening on that throughout the different areas. And I've been asking some of these same questions, but I just haven't gotten to the department. So is there any program, and I would imagine this would be Ms. Grom, that the department has that helps assist and walk people through? And what it kind of reminds me of, we talked about this a little bit last year in the SUD world, you know, putting together a group that helps handhold those folks in the SUD world as they roll out the demonstration project. So what does the department have that can help handhold the small nonprofits that are out there that are being innovative and doing these unique things that right now are just for different reasons being locked out?
Mr. Chair and Representative, this is a really great conversation to be having right now. We at the moment are really thinking about how we can be more intentional about reaching out to those small providers and to especially those BIPOC providers. We find ourselves at the department spending a lot of time with the same group of stakeholders that many of you hear from, that you might have several meetings a day hearing from. And that same dynamic happens at the department. And so we really need to take a step back and make sure that we're creating space and being intentional about who we talk to and what kind of outreach we do to those smaller providers and organizations, and especially in, you know, BIPOC communities where maybe there's English as a second language. There are new Americans. So we are working on developing sort of a statewide project to reach out to some of those communities and those smaller providers to help them understand what RFPs are coming out, when they're coming out, how to access them. We're also working with our Department of Administration to streamline some of these processes to the extent possible. There are certainly some requirements in state law in Chapter 16 related to procurement that do create some difficulties as we're trying to administer these grant programs in the most streamlined way. So we are looking at that issue, and I will acknowledge that we have some work to do. I will say, Representative Thompson, we did have some funding last year in the and I think Article 17 of the Home and Community-Based Services provisions that is specific to small and BIPOC providers. And though that funding was, like Nirja mentioned, Ms. Singh just mentioned, was just approved last week. So we've got the RFP that's ready to go out, and hopefully we'll be communicating that. And we'd love to let you know when those go out, so that as you're working with your constituents and your communities, you can also help us spread the word. But I acknowledge we've got some work to do here, and we'd love to hear any ideas that you have going forward and share more of ours as we progress through session.
Thank you, Ms. Grom. And I will also mention out to Representative Thompson, I do have an interest in this, and I'd like to reach out to you to put some things together. I know that I've been talking to some other people behind the scenes trying to figure out what we can do to put together a better way to streamline the process to help particularly nonprofits, is where the small organizations doing this work, where they can come in. And so I'd be happy to work with you to try to put something together that we could bring forward. And I know that there are others interested, and I'd like to see us do it in a way that's a model, because I know that our counties have this same issue. I know Ramsey County has this issue they're trying to crack, and maybe working together, we can figure out a model that can help the state and the county figure out what the barriers are. So these small groups that you're mentioning that do the great work, and I've run into some of them on the east side of St. Paul, that because of their size, they just don't have the ability to be able to get through all the hurdles that the larger organizations are able to. So you're bringing up a very valid point, and I'd like to work with you on that. Representative Thompson, other questions that you might have or comments?
Chair Fisher, with all due respect, what is BIPOC? I mean, this acronym, POSSE, BIPOC. I'm just like fed up with those acronyms, man. BIPOC, POSSE, these are like buzzwords to me. First of all, as a matter of fact, I don't know if anybody in this committee knows that African Americans don't like to be called BIPOC, Black. We just want to be human beings. So what's the alternate of a person? What's the opposite of a person of color? Transparent? We're all human beings here, man. And those acronyms are meant, they're put in place to leave a certain group of people out of the resources. And that's a fact. Honestly, I don't know if any of you guys heard that before, but I want to be the first to tell you that we really don't like being called BIPOC or being grouped in that. We're just human beings. It's no different than the deputy police chief over in Minneapolis. He says if we keep recruiting the way we recruit, we're gonna get the same white boys that you complain about. He said that, and he lost his job. Nobody likes to be called anything but who we are. I'm John. You're Peter Fisher. And I want to put that out there so we could like stop this BIPOC, POSSE, Black, White. We're human beings. Let's keep it moving.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. I appreciate that. Representative Becker-Finn.
Yeah, to get back to Ms. Grom's comments, I just want to bring up that, you know, and this is one of those things, this, my mom's favorite phrase is like saying like, well, she means well, or they mean well. And I think what often happens is that when we focus just on outreach, there's this feeling that like if an email is sent out or we put up an announcement in different languages, that then the work is done, or that, you know, we've done the outreach and we didn't hear from anybody. So, you know, I guess there's not the need out there. You know, there's just sort of, I see this in every department. It's just part of the way that government operates and is used to operating. And so I just want to encourage you know, it may mean reassigning somebody to spend time actually building relationships instead of, you know, sort of a one-way communication where it's like, here, we put this out to you, we reached out to you. You know, it's really common with the tribes where, you know, the answer will be, well, we sent them an email, I don't know, you know, or we sent them a letter. And it's like, that's not a building a relationship where like any organization or tribal unit would want to like engage in a process that is not easy to figure out. So I think whatever can be done to sort of build those relationships and also, you know, make the applications themselves simpler, and really looking at what you're asking for in the application so that we're getting at the heart of what you really want to get at instead of just status quo using the same form. Well, we always ask that question, but why do you ask that question? So I just want to encourage you to sort of more, in a more encompassing way, sort of dig into that as a way to like take down those barriers where make sure that we're not just checking a box, that we're actually engaged and trying to build power in our communities. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Becker-Finn. I didn't hear a particular question there. So, okay, no, thank you. And the reason I'm asking that is I'm noticing we're at 9:30 here, so we don't have a lot of time left for the next part of the presentation. So I will say at this point, and not seeing any other hands, to turn it back over to Ms. Grom and to continue on with your presentation then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do want to quickly comment on the last comment from Representative Becker-Finn. I think we couldn't agree more with you. We've been working with our community relations part of the department to really to build those relationships and to foster them and acknowledge that it's a two-way street, that it's not just about DHS saying, here, we're coming to talk to you about something that we want to talk about, but it's actually hearing from the community what's important to them, what they want to talk about, and structuring our conversations in that fashion, so it's not just one-sided. So that is a priority that we're embarking on, and I love the idea, and I think your comments are really important. So we'll continue to continue that work, and then I would love to have a conversation with you if you're interested about hearing more about your ideas and what we're doing. But moving on to the next part of the presentation, our legislative priorities for 2022. So I won't spend much time on this first slide, technical and clarifying policy changes. It wouldn't be a legislative session if DHS didn't have some technical corrections to bring forward. So just quickly walking through these, we are repealing some obsolete advisory councils and pilot projects, really just cleaning up the books. That will be something that's part of our budget or part of our policy bill that you'll see coming forward hopefully soon. Again, some terminology updates from chemical dependency to substance use disorder, just aligning with the modern terminology and the DSM and clinical usage. We have a very straightforward clarification on targeted case management telehealth. This is really just aligning with legislative intent. We've spoken with legislators and stakeholders about this already. It's a non-substantive change. And then also some licensing clarifications for SUD programs. So these would just codify existing statute, clarify language around affiliations for licensed professionals in private practice, and then making some clarifications around licensed alcohol and drug counselors. And then moving on to some of our proposals related to simplifying requirements and really refocusing that time on focusing on people and supporting them and having better outcomes. So over the past year or so at DHS, we've really been intentional about knowing when we need to, when we're adding something, making sure that it's actually adding value and that, you know, there are times when actually reducing things can add value too. And so to that end, a couple of provisions related to that in the policy bill this year. So one of them is our mental health uniform service standards. I don't want to alarm people. It's not going to be the giant USS package that you saw last year. It's really just making some clarification. So last year, the way that the USS was passed, it was passed during regular session. And then during special session, updates were made to similar areas of statutes that were consolidated into that new chapter, that 245I. So we really just have to reconcile some of those changes and update cross-references as part of this work. And then we do have some changes related to reducing paperwork requirements for SUD programs. So these are mostly coming out of our licensing area, and they would just remove documentation requirements to better align with our billing requirements that are in rule and statute, eliminate some of the redundancy in the provider standards in Chapter 245G. And then moving to one of our significant priorities for DHS this session is addressing the workforce crisis. So the crisis really has reached crisis levels, or the shortage, I should say, has reached crisis levels. So we've all experienced this. It impacts every part of the economic, every economic sector, but especially those sectors that are dependent on our public health programs or, you know, medical assistance dollars are especially struggling. And because these sectors can't, you know, increase their prices or change requirements all on their own, a lot of what they do is contingent on legislative funding and legislative requirements. At DHS, we really think it's our responsibility as a state to help support those sectors and develop some strategies and long-term systemic changes to address the workforce crisis. So this proposal would invest $115 million in the 22-23 biennium to really revitalize our behavioral health, as well as our disability, older adult, and housing workforce sectors by establishing a workforce incentive fund. This fund could be used for providers to make payments to workers who are lower wage earners, so $30 an hour or less, and who worked at an employer for 6 months, to pay for things like retention and incentive bonuses or loans, scholarship payments, childcare, transportation costs, to really help retain the staff that they have on board to provide those services. I will say in this space, we're hoping to do more. We're hoping to make this a more robust workforce proposal as we look ahead to the February forecast. And as we work with all of you and collaborate on, I know we've heard a lot of really great ideas. So we wanna make sure that we're really addressing the workforce crisis in a significant way this session. And then moving on to intensive mental health services. So we have a whole host of changes related to intensive mental health services. We know that there's a continuum of services, and we need to look at every part of that continuum, ranging from the more intensive parts where it's, you know, hospitalizations and intensive residential treatment settings, all the way to our community-based services. So a few of the investments in the budget that you'll be hearing more about in the coming week related to the intensive mental health services here. The first of which is intensive treatment and foster care benefit expansion. So like the name suggests, this is an intensive benefit for children and youth who have some pretty significant mental health needs. Neerja mentioned some policy changes we made in this area last session. This is a bundled service that includes things like psychotherapy, psychoeducation, care coordination, crisis assistance. And it's available to children in foster care or who are already in out-of-home placement settings, for example, like children's residential treatment facilities. So this proposal would expand this particular Medicaid benefit to also include children who are living with their families but who might be at risk of out-of-home placement. So we really want to get upstream, serve more families and kids, and keep families together as a result of this change. Expanding beds for inpatient psychiatric services. So this would be a $26 million investment to expand children's inpatient hospital psychiatric beds, as well as psychiatric residential treatment facility beds. We call those PRTFs. So the funding would be issued through a competitive request for proposal, and people could apply for those funds. And we're hoping to really continue to build out this part of the continuum of care for those acute needs and add about 100 beds to the system as a result of this proposal. Again, related to psychiatric residential treatment facilities, we have an investment in some startup grants for those facilities. There's a significant amount of administrative hoops that those provider types have to jump through. Some of them are things that we can probably change and are working on that from a state level, but some of those requirements are federal requirements. So because of that, we want to make sure that we can really support new providers in coming on board as PRTF. So this would be an additional funding for those startup grants to make sure that that providers can be having the staff on board that they need and to provide the services to the community that are just very desperately needed right now. We could also, in this proposal, we're also allowing the funds to be used for emergency workforce needs as well. And then expanding mobile transition units for children and adults. So this was a proposal From last session, it was one-time funding funded through that HCBS FMAP, and it was really targeted for children that were exiting our CABS programs as well as our PRTFs, and it was focused on sort of in line with that HCBS FMAP requirements, transitioning those children back to the community, which is great. We've got approval for that. We're going to be getting going soon on it, but we also know that we have an ongoing need for this, and we have adults and children who are in hospital emergency departments or inpatient settings that also really need support to transition to the most therapeutic level of care. So this would help support individuals coming out of hospitals as well. And there's also some additional funding for person-centered discharge planning. So we could use some of our experts who do person-centered planning to go and meet the child or the adult and go and meet the family, the current providers, the future providers, all of the folks that are involved in the person support plan, and talk about the next step and what the child or the person really wants and what they need in their next in the next setting so that they can have better outcomes and feel more supported making those transitions. And then moving to our children's mental health respite proposal. So children's mental health respite grants are grants that are available to counties and to tribes to really help support families who are who have children with emotional disturbances or severe emotional disturbances who are at risk of out-of-home placement. So it's really about making sure that the parent or the caregiver gets a temporary break. We can reduce some of the stress that's occurring in that family and promote you know, better family preservation and better outcomes. So this proposal is really redefining the scope and making some flexibilities for how the how these funds can be spent and what would be allowable expenditures under the grant. And we're also adding, changing the eligibility to make sure that children who are already in out-of-home placement but might be at risk of having to go to a higher level of care or having to be moved to another setting can also get access to these important dollars. So specifically, we would make sure that the law is explicit and clear that funds could be used for recreational and sport activities, family activities, camps, retreats, culturally specific activities, as well as costs for transportation and food. So we've been working with counties and our tribal partners since last probably spring, looking at this grant and making sure that what's that actually it's meeting the needs that are identified in the community and that we're aligning the law appropriately. So it's a budget neutral proposal, but it's a really important one for us this session. Moving to the other part of the spectrum that I mentioned earlier, the community-based mental health services, we have significant investments in the governor's budget here, starting with the expansion of our first episode psychosis grant program. So we know when it comes to psychosis that treatment and intervention, early treatment and intervention is really important and can really change the trajectory of a person's outcome and experience with services. So right now we have three first episode psychosis programs that serve about 140 individuals. And this proposal would add an additional $1 million to create a new provider site to help improve access across the state. We're also investing in this budget in establishing an emerging mood disorder program. So here again, early intervention is really important. We know that mood disorders can be treated effectively and that when we intervene earlier, there's a better chance of successful recovery. And so this is a $1 million investment to create an emerging mood disorder program that would use, you know, evidence-informed interventions for people that are experiencing emerging mood disorders. It also includes a public awareness campaign so that people can be more aware of if maybe they're experiencing a mood disorder and seek treatment earlier. The next couple of proposals, expanding mobile crisis funding and expanding our transition to community initiative funding is related again to adding to that one-time funding that happened last session in these particular grants. So we would be adding funding about, I believe, $12 million in 24-25 for mobile crisis grant funding. This is a really critical need in the community right now, and not everything is billable. Not all of those services are MA billable. So we need to make sure that the communities have grants to be able to support that infrastructure and continue to get those crisis calls and respond accordingly. The expansion to transition community initiative, again, adding that funding that we added last session to the base ongoing into the tails. And so this is really a grant that's helping people to transition from more restrictive settings like Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center, the Security Hospital, and other hospital settings to more community-based settings. Adult day treatment. So adult day treatment, Nirja mentioned a rate study earlier, and so we're really looking forward to getting a rate study and an actual modeling done of what our mental health and substance use disorder rates really should be to make sure that we can sustain those services across the state. Adult day treatment is one rate that when we took a look at it, it's extremely low compared to some of the other similar rates. And it's a service that's oftentimes used as a step-down service. So when people are leaving maybe an IRTS facility or a hospital, oftentimes adult day treatment is a really helpful service for them to get wraparound services to meet their needs when it comes to behavioral health services and holistic services. So the governor's budget does recommend a 50% rate increase for this service. We would need federal approval for that. And then Children's Mental Health Community of Practice. Some of you might remember last session we passed the Substance Use Disorder Community of Practice. So this is really a modest investment of, I think, $250,000 per year to establish a community to help support children and families to be able to facilitate that learning, building partnerships, really sharing best practices so that we can improve outcomes for children. Because many of you have mentioned it today, it's just there's a lot of struggles right now. People don't know where to go or what to do when it comes to children's mental health. And then moving on to the opiate epidemic. So here at DHS, and many of you I know on this committee are extremely concerned and continue to be extremely concerned about the opiate crisis in Minnesota. Things don't appear to be getting that much better. Just to kind of put things into perspective, between the year 2000 and 2020, the number of annual opiate deaths increased from 54 per year to 655 per year. And that trend is continuing to escalate. So between 2019 and 2020, the data shows that we have that the number of opiate deaths has increased by 53%. Even more, the crisis has really disproportionately impacted communities of color across the state. In particular, we've seen the American Indian community really being impacted by this crisis, and there's an extreme need to do something about it. So this past summer, the Minnesota Attorney General joined on to a national multi-state settlement against Johnson & Johnson and then the three largest opiate distributors. This is a really historic settlement. Our attorney general did a great job. It was a $26 billion national settlement. And so we've had, as part of that settlement, we've had a lot of conversations in Minnesota about how to maximize the amount of funds that are coming into Minnesota to really remediate some of the harms caused by opiate, you know, prescriptions and promoting opiate use. And so we've had conversations with the Attorney General and MDH. Some of you have been a part of those conversations to look at what is the appropriate allocation model and how can we make sure that Minnesota gets its, the maximum amount possible. So we will be having, it looks like, over $300 million of additional revenue coming in to the state, in some cases going directly to counties and cities to remediate some of the harms caused by the opiate distributors and the companies. And so as part of those conversations, we've really been looking at what are we going to do with, from the governor's perspective, with that additional funding. Much of it's going to be decided at the local level, which we think is great and important. But a few proposals in this budget to really try to address some of the issues that we're seeing. So we would be adding a member from each federally recognized tribe in Minnesota to the ORAC or the Opiate Epidemic Response Advisory Council to make sure that we have a member of each sovereign nation on that council. This is a proposal that was in the budget last year, so you might be familiar with it. We are also recommending that at least 40% of the ORAC grants are spent on culturally responsive proposals. Right now, the ORAC is doing a pretty good job of this. They've got some metrics in place to actually score the RFPs when they come in to make sure that they've are really taking an equity view on all of those proposals. So we want to make sure that we continue to support at least that 40% of those grants are going to the communities who need them the most. And then we're also adding base funding for our traditional healing grants. So right now, those traditional healing grants are funded, I believe, through fiscal year 2024. So we would make that funding ongoing to make sure that our tribal communities who access those grants and our urban American Indian organizations can continue to do that good work and address the epidemic as it's most appropriate in their communities. And then lastly, we'll be part of the governor's recommendation is to really establish a framework to measure outcomes and improvements over time. So we know that counties and cities will be getting a significant amount of funding from the settlement, which is great. And the ORAC and DHS really want to make sure that we're able to collect minimally, not in a cumbersome way, collect some information to make sure that we're aware of what's working out there. What are the promising practices? How can we maybe even take a deeper dive and asking MMB to do some evaluation of some of those promising practices and, you know, make recommendations around ongoing funding and maybe statewide funding. And then I'm looking at the clock. I have to breeze through this slide. So direct access and SUD federal compliance. So Minnesota has really been reforming the way that people access and receive substance use disorder services in an effort to transition to a more person-centered, a more equitable model of care. And one of our really key projects along these lines is called direct access. So this is concept that removes what we know of as like a placing authority, a county or tribal placing authority, or the Rule 25 process with a more streamlined process that would allow someone to directly access an SUD service. They would, instead of a Rule 25, get what we now call a comprehensive assessment, and that would be done by a clinician who can confirm medical necessity and approve treatment of services. So just like I could go in and get, you know, mental health services if I was on MA anywhere, not have to kind of go through the county and go through a placing authority, or physical health services. This is really transitioning our SUD services to make sure that clients have a choice of where they go and that access has improved to SUD services. So we've already started the direct access reforms that started back in November of 2020. So we're in kind of a parallel process right now. We wanted to make sure we could transition to the new process and sort of leave that old process in place for a bit so we could transition smoothly. That parallel process will be ending this July. And that's really, the timing is based on some federal authority issues we have. So we have a special waiver right now that allows us to waive a person's choice of provider. And that expires June 30th. It's not something that CMS is interested in renewing, and it's not really in DHS's and the governor's policy direction to continue to limit a person's choice of provider. So we won't have that federal authority to do the process anymore come July. So this proposal is really a lot of cleanup just to make that final transition. It's sort of removing references to placing authority, removing references to Rule 25, there's also some administrative funding associated with the former process that tribes and counties get. We're leaving that funding in place to make sure that they don't have a reduction in funding, and having a lot of conversations with counties and tribes about this reform as we move forward and look ahead toward full implementation. And then finally, we do have a couple of definitions that we're adding to SUD chapter of law. These are in line with the American Society of Addiction Medicine criteria for skilled treatment and intensive outpatient levels of care. And this is really just a federal requirement that we have to meet for our 1115 SUD demonstration waiver. But it's also sort of the beginning of us working with all of you and working with providers and people as we look ahead to, you know, making sure that our system is fully compliant with those evidence-based ASAM standards that we know lead to better outcomes. So lots of work still to be done there, but just starting to work on it slowly but surely. And then lastly, just a quick note that the governor's budget is extremely robust, as many of you may have seen. And there's we've talked today about things that relate specifically to behavioral health, but there are many investments that certainly are going to support a person having better behavioral health outcomes. So access to healthy food, anti-poverty measures, increasing our general assistance amounts for people who are living in deep poverty. Those haven't been increased since 1986. Making sure that our emergency general assistance appropriate at appropriate funding levels for counties and tribes so they can really meet the needs in their community. We have a significant investment in affordable housing and helping people to find and maintain housing. And then lastly, maybe I'll just mention a lot of investments in education. And one thing we didn't talk about today is there is an additional investment in our schooling behavioral health grants, and that will be tracked in the education side of the budget. So some of you might encounter that in other committees. So that is what I wanted to share with you today. Hopefully it wasn't too fast. I know we have a little bit of time left for questions, so happy to answer them as I'm able.
Thank you, Ms. Grom, for the report. We've got a little over five minutes left here. I know that Representative Katiza Lathoon is on the phone right now and had wanted to get a chance to ask questions too. So I'll start off with her and then go to Representative Frankie. And we've just got 5 minutes left, so I'm just letting folks know we got a time crunch here. Representative Katiza Lathoon, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify one quick question about the respite grant program. I think that you had mentioned that it was revenue neutral. And I'm curious, I'm a former foster parent, and I just wanted to, pipe in about how important respite care can be for foster parents and having for children to be able to have that break and to be able to participate in some of those activities that you mentioned. So I really appreciate the time that you guys are spending looking into other things that could qualify for that money. I'm curious, how many requests are there annually? I mean, is it seeming like that the amount of funds dedicated to this is appropriate and that we're just looking for other ways that the money is legally allowed to be spent? Or, at the end of the year, are we really thinking that if there was more funding for this type of grant, that that more families, more foster parents could be helped by that, just because I know that we are in such critical need of foster parents and foster families that that sometimes I wonder, if there was more funding for these types of benefits, could we potentially attract more people to serve in this capacity?
Ms. Grom.
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. I don't have the specific numbers on how many, how the funding is, how many applications there are, how it's spent, but I will say we have heard recently from counties and I think from tribes as well that more funding would be helpful. When we started, as you know, we start the governor's budget work early on, and it's a policy year, but we've had, information now about pretty significant surplus. So I think we'd certainly be open to more funding for this. And this proposal was really kind of focused on making sure that we're administering the grant in alignment with state law. But absolutely, I think more funding would be something we would very much welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Grom. Representative Katiza Thune, anything, any additional questions?
No, I would be glad to talk further about that. So we can connect offline. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Grom, I'm wondering on the expansion of the children's psych beds, what do you have a number, an amount, or percentage of how many of those are you hoping will be emergency psych beds, temporary psych beds, long-term psych beds? What are we hoping for going forward?
Ms. Grom.
Mr. Chair and Representative Frankie, I believe we're hoping to add about 100 beds to current capacity, and these are meant to be inpatient beds, not emergency room beds. So this is really kind of those inpatient PRTF level of care and hospital level of care for children who meet that those levels of care.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Grom. Just one more quick thing, and can you just send me the information, Ms. Grom, on the direct access reform for the SUD, doing away with the Rule 25? That sounds very interesting to me because a lot of people that throughout recovery are like, how do I get the help? Where do I start? I don't have the funds. And you have to point them in that direction to start. And so if you can get me that information on the language on that, I'd just love to take a look at it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Franke. Ms. Graham, yes, look forward to having that information forwarded to us. I appreciate it. We are coming up at the end of our time here. I want to say thank you to our presenters from the department. I think this has been very helpful to begin the session and prepare us for the weeks ahead. Next week, we'll be receiving a presentation from the Substance Use Disorder Treatment Community about the needs and barriers facing Minnesotans in recovery. More information will be posted soon. And with that, we will adjourn. Thank you all.